So our topic is prayers of Queen Kunti. And I thought a nice place to begin is, let's see, to ask some of our young people here. You're one young people. If you could just share something. I see. One, two, three. Should we count you as four? Yeah? Say something, one something, not everything, just something about Queen Kunti, something that you know about Queen Kunti. And the kids in the back. Oh. Could you two in the back stand up? Three. One, two, three. Is there four of you or there's three of you? Of those three in the back, raise your hand if you know something about Queen Kunti. Queen Kunti. One, two. Two and a half? Now, okay, the young boy in the red shirt, the other two can put your hands down. Who is Arjuna? Who is Arjuna? Who did Krishna speak Bhagavad Gita to? Ah, very good. And do you know who is the mother of Arjuna? Hint. Queen Kunti, right. Okay. See, Queen Kunti is the mother of Arjuna. And if Queen Kunti is the mother of Arjuna, who else is she the mother of? Pandavas. Okay, we're going to hear something more about it. That was actually number six. And his name was Karna. Karna means here. So can you say something about Queen Kunti in the white t-shirt? She what? Queen Kunti was what? Six or five? Yeah. Six or five. Well, actually, Madri was also one of the wives of Pandu. Pandu was the husband of Kunti. You with me? Pandu had two wives. Madri had two sons of those six. Those two sons were Nakula and Sahadev. So Queen Kunti was the son, was the mother of Karna, and then later, who was the eldest of the five brothers? Go ahead. Yudhisthira. And then the next one? Bhima. And the next one? Arjuna. And then Nakula and Sahadev. Okay. Do you know something else you'd like to share about Queen Kunti with your nice blue shirt on? Something? That's good enough, right? Okay. Something about Queen Kunti. How was Kunti related to Krishna? Was Kunti related to Krishna? And what was the relationship? Family relationship. Who was Krishna's father when he was born in the prison house of Kamsa? Father and mother were... Okay. So, Vasudev and Kunti were brother and sister. Vasudev and Kunti were brother and sister. They had the same father. Their father was Shurasena. So, Vasudev and Devaki gave birth to Krishna, and Kunti was the brother of Vasudeva, so that makes Kunti Krishna's aunt. Yeah, that's right. Okay. Would you like to say something about Kunti? You exhausted the stock of thoughts you have about Kunti? Moment of silence is the moment of truth. Who raised who was Queen Kunti's father? I mentioned it, Shurasena. But she was raised from a little girl. By whom? Kunti Bhoja. Wow. Yeah. So, what happened was, Shurasena had a very good friend. Shurasena, there's next time I do this, we're going to have the whole family tree. There's a big family. Shurasena had lots of children. And of his children, one was Kunti, but he had a very dear friend, Kunti Bhoja. Actually, her name, Pritha, was her name given by her father, Shurasena. But he had a friend who had no children. So he made an arrangement that Kunti was raised by Kunti Bhoja. So when Kunti was a young girl in the palace of Kunti Bhoja, who visited Kunti Bhoja's palace? A brahmana named, starts with a D. Durvasa Muni. You heard of Durvasa Muni before? Durvasa Muni? So, what happened? Everyone, Durvasa Muni came to town, everyone went, "Ah, look out, here comes Durvasa Muni." Because it was known that Durvasa Muni, when he's easily angered, because Durvasa Muni is a partial incarnation of Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva has another name besides, number of names, and one of them is Ashutosh. Ashutosh means one who is easily pleased, one who is easily angered. And when Durvasa Muni gets angered, look out. So everyone ran the other way when Durvasa Muni came to town, except Kunti, because she was so happy to be able to serve a great sage, and she served him so nicely. Durvasa Muni showed the other side. Rather than easily angered, he was very pleased. So he wanted to give her something very special. Do you know what that something very special was? Do you know what that something very special was? He, Durvasa Muni, gave Kunti a mantra. Very unusual, not the Maha Mantra. Mm-mm. It was a mantra because he knew, Durvasa Muni knew that when Kunti was a mature woman, not now she's just a young woman, not married, that she would have difficulty when she was married having children. So he gave a mantra whereby Kunti could call any demigod she wanted and with that demigod have a child. So Durvasa Muni left. Little girl, got the special mantra. She wanted to check it out. She's very curious. So she used the mantra and called, who did she call? Surya, sun god. And Kunti's saying no, and Surya said, don't worry, this is land of the Supreme Lord, and so many things. So a child was born of the combination of Kunti and the sun god, Vivaswan, or Surya. And that child's name was Karna. Yeah. Right? You're familiar with this? Okay. So, here's this young girl, not married, with a small child. Their unique child at that is born with armor on his body. Any of you that are mothers, imagine that. Son of the sun god. So, who's going to believe her that, you know, well, I got this mantra from Durvasa Muni, and sun god came, and I didn't lose my virginity, and here's a small child, Hari Bol. No one's going to buy that one. What am I going to do? My curiosity got the best of me. So she prayed and took a very drastic step. She put the child in a basket, praying to the sun god, please make an arrangement for this child to be put in the care of a qualified mother, father to raise the child. And off the child went down the Ganga. And a chariot driver of Dhritarashtra found the child, so he and his wife raised the child. So Karna became known as the son of a chariot driver, which is not a Kshatriya profession, it's a Shudra profession. So he wasn't eligible to take part in Draupadi's Swayamvar ceremony. And when Draupadi said no, Karna really got angry and held that anger like we're not supposed to, and brought lots of problems to Karna. So then later Kunti was married. Her Swayamvar, arranged by Kunti Bhoja, many, many kings and eligible persons. She chose Pandu and Madri. Also became married, second wife, and Pandu became king of the world. Kunti became married to the king of the world. And then some very unfortunate circumstance happened. Pandu went hunting, saw a pair of deer, male, female, enjoying together, shot the male and female deer. It turned out it was a sage, taking a form of a deer along with his wife, and he killed them both. So before dying, the sage gave this curse or utterance that, as I have died, you also, by enjoying with your wives, you will also immediately die. So Pandu was horrified that he had killed a Brahmana and Brahmani. And he decided, I should just give up the kingdom, or at least go to the forest and live a life of asceticism. And the queens wanted to go with him. So he allowed that, and they spent some years in the forest. And in the course of his doing rituals as a religious king, he was performing the Shraddha ceremony for his forefathers, and thinking of more deeply on his circumstance, it was his duty similarly to provide sons so that the forefathers could be propitiated in a religious manner. But he was unable to produce sons or children. So he spoke like this to Madri and said, or to Kunti. So Kunti was advised by Pandu, according to scriptures, if the king is unable to produce a son, then someone else of suitable stature can do so. So this is my request. And she didn't want to do that. But then she explained to him about this mantra, which she kept a secret. She didn't tell him about Karna, but she explained the secret that Durvasa Muni had given this very interesting mantra. Oh, so Pandu was very happy. Then called different demigods. So first Dharmaraj or Yamaraj, and Yudhisthira was born. Pandu then said, request a son that is overwhelmingly powerful. So Vayu was called and Bhima was born. Indra was called, Arjuna was born. Madri didn't want to be left out. So Kunti shared the mantra with Madri and two sons were born, Nakula and Sahadeva, from the Ashwini Kumaras. So five sons. And then as fate would have it, Pandu became lustily attracted to Madri and he died. So the two queens were ready to enter into the funeral pyre of their good husband, but one of them had to stay behind, and Madri insisted, "You're the best. You're the best at taking care of these five boys. You should stay, and I'll go and enter into the funeral pyre of Pandu." So that was the arrangement. The sages were consulted in the forest, and they advised immediately go back to Hastinapur and take shelter of the royal family. And then so many other things happened. The house of Lak, the enmity between the Kauravas and Pandavas, the attempt to kill Bhima. It's in these prayers of Kunti. The house of Lak, but rescued by Krishna's devotee, Vidura. Hidimbi. You know who was Hidimbi? Yeah. Hidimbi is the wife of Bhima. Hidimba, her brother. Rakshasa. The language in her prayers is cannibals. Krishna protected, ultimately, giving strength to Bhima. And so many difficulties the Pandavas underwent. When the Pandavas went into exile, Kunti stayed at the home of Vidura in Hastinapur. When the Pandavas returned from their exile during the Kurukshetra battle, finally Kunti saw her son Yudhisthira installed on the throne. The funeral for the deceased soldiers was performed. Now Krishna is ready to leave, because he had come from Dwarka to give protection and assistance to the Pandavas and Kunti. And as we see in this painting, Krishna is getting on the chariot, ready to depart back to Dwarka. And there's, and in the public square, there's throngs of people seeing Krishna off, not wanting to see him go, something quite similar to Krishna's departure. The place is different, but the rasa is similar. Krishna's leaving Vrindavan to go to Mathura. Again, the rasa is different, but the mood is quite similar. So Kunti works her way through the crowded throngs in the public square and comes right before the chariot of Krishna and appeals to Krishna, "Please don't go. mean, that's like bottom line in her prayers. But in her prayers, she's something very similar to what the gopis do. When the gopis, in Vrindavan, the gopis were concealing externally their love for Krishna. But when Krishna was leaving, they stopped concealing. It gushed out of their hearts, pleading and speaking and conducting themselves in such a way. It was so clear how attached they were to Krishna. Now Kunti is also, she's attached in a very interesting way. She's the aunt, right? Yeah. But she doesn't see Krishna as her nephew. She sees Krishna as Super Soul. Now, could you imagine? I find this completely fascinating. Just like Devahuti. She knows that her son is God. She knows it perfectly. It's like from the very beginning of her prayers or her discussion with Kapila Dev. Devahuti knows. Go into these prayers a little bit, and we'll start with this nice prayer. We'll say together, prayer to Krishna. Hey Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute. Oh my dear Krishna, you are the friend of the distressed and the source of creation. You are the master of the gopis and the lover of Radharani. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. So, as we find this nice prayer in our Bhagavad Gita introduction, all of Kunti's prayers are similarly glorification of Krishna. Very nicely presented. So, this is just indicating some of the main themes in her prayers. These, out of so many ones that I particularly appreciate, she has such profound humility. Again and again, she speaks of herself in language that indicates her disqualification or lack of qualification. At the same time, she's saying things that make it very clear how qualified she is. She's sharing, because of that humility, realizations are there, and she's sharing those realizations, but she's, while displaying her heart and the depth of her heart, she's all the while maintaining this quality of humility before Krishna. She's not presenting as like strong philosophy, but in her own way, very clearly the distinction between bhakti and gyan. She recognizes again and again various seemingly contradictory, inconceivable features of Krishna that make him unknown, even to her, although she's revealing so many things about him, covered by the curtain of Maya. And appreciating how Krishna protects those who have him as their only shelter. This is certainly a theme in the relationship with the Pandavas and Draupadi and Kunti. She's recognizing also again and again the contradictory, notice it's in big letters, contradictory qualities that she sees in Krishna. So her prayers disclose these apparent contradictions, and her understanding of that apparent contradictory nature of Krishna, how those contradictions are resolved. She's not a heavy-duty philosopher, but she's a very deep devotee, and revealing these messages through her prayers. So text 18 is the first in this chapter. Just read the translation. Srimati Kunti said, O Krishna, I offer my obeisances unto you because you are the original personality and are unaffected by the qualities of the material world. You are existing both within and without everything, yet you are invisible to all. So right away, here's some contradiction. Explicit. You're existing both within and without everything, yet you are invisible. He's the original personality in the sense as shown in the image to the right. He's the absolute truth, the original form of Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan. The Bhagavatam is teaching, and Kunti understands it. He's the original source of everything, the original personality. Unaffected by the qualities of the material world, that is, he is the source of the material creation. He enters into the material creation but isn't affected by the qualities of the material creation. And he's not visible. This is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's translation or statement of what Kunti is saying. I offer my respects to you, the Supreme Person, the original one, the controller, beyond the control of Prakriti, unseen by material senses, and existing inside and outside of all living beings. Now I like Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, so I'm going to take how he makes his commentary by reading Krishna's mind. Would you like to be able to read Krishna's mind? Well, meet Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and you'll find somebody that knows how to read Krishna's mind. Here's how he does his commentary. Understand everything, understanding everything that Krishna had done recently, Kunti was unable to tolerate the agitation caused by the great respect that arose in her heart. Agitation because he's treating her like his aunt, and she's seeing him as the personality of Godhead, super soul. It's agitating her heart. She's the veneration. This isn't Vrindavan mood. It's outside of Vrindavan. It's in Hastinapur, where she sees with veneration. So it's disturbing her heart that Krishna is taking the subordinate position and now he's going to leave. So she begins by offering praises. Krishna responds, but I'm your nephew. Why are you offering me respects? But you are the Supreme Lord. Purusham, Krishna. Of course I'm a Purusha, a male. There's no doubt about that. Kunti. But you are the first one, Adyam Purusham. Well, all bodies come and go and all souls are original. I'm not this body. But you are the Supreme Ishvara. Well, in Swarga, Indra and the moon god, and on earth, kings are controllers. But you are the superior to Prakriti, meaning Indra and the moon god and kings on earth are not superior to Prakriti. Am I the Purusha within, Paramatma? Kunti. No, you are impeccable, Alaksham. Excuse me, imperceptible. The Paramatma is subject to revelation by use of intelligence and other means. Their gyanis can come to the conclusion. There's a verse in the Bhagavatam that specifically says, by taking help of the intelligence. A fantastic purport by Prabhupada. How one can understand Supersoul. Am I the imperceptible Brahman? You're saying I'm imperceptible. Am I the imperceptible Brahman? No. You are situated internally and externally. That's Vishwanath. So this phrase, alaksham sarvabhutanam antar vihir avastitam, he's both inside and outside everything, yet unintelligent conditioned souls cannot see you. And Krishna speaks something similar in Bhagavad Gita, that one can see the Supreme Personality guided through jnana chakshusa, eyes of knowledge. He who opens these eyes of knowledge is called the spiritual master. This is Vishwanath speaking. Then the message is there, the Lord is covered by the curtain of Yogamaya, and thus ordinary people cannot see him. That's her statement, but she's seeing him. Now, later she's going to say, I see you, but I don't see you. I don't see you as you truly are. And that's part of her humility. But one who is, when Krishna sees the devotion, this is bhakti versus gyan, by the way, when Krishna sees the devotion in the heart of the devotee, then he removes that curtain of Yogamaya. And Krishna reveals himself as he's done with Kunti. He's revealed truths about himself that speculators or those that don't have devotion can't possibly understand. Text number 19. Being beyond the range of limited sense perception, you're the eternally irreproachable factor covered by the curtain of deluding energy. You are invisible to the foolish observer exactly as an actor dressed as a player is not recognized. There's a pastime in Chaitanya's Leela, Gaura Leela, where Lord Chaitanya, he wanted to perform a drama. So when Lord Chaitanya wants to do something, it happens. So he got the devotees together, and he was the script writer and the director, and he arranged the costumes, and he was one of the performers as well. And when he was performing, Mother Sachi was in the audience, and she was asking, who is that on the stage? That's your son, Nimai. And she fainted. He was so expert at performing the part that he was presenting. Now, Krishna, foolish observers can't understand Krishna as much as one can't understand who a player is when he's on the stage performing. They may think of Krishna as an ordinary person. That's the part that he seems to be playing, but he's actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the source of everything. So here's an image of actors on a stage. This is the Broadway, the Lion King. So pretty clear that the masks of the lion and the tiger roaring at each other, it's not the person behind the mask. But you know, if you only see the covering or the mask or the feature that Krishna displays, then we're not going to understand the person that's behind Krishna. And that's because the covering of the Maya potency. Now, Yoga Maya and Maha Maya have a very clear relationship. It's actually one energy, but the Yoga Maya potency then expands herself in the Maha Maya potency. Yes? Exactly as we find in the appearance of Lord Krishna, every Janmashtami we hear about this, after the six sons of Devaki were killed, the seventh child within the womb of Devaki was Balaram. So Krishna called his Yogamaya potency, and they had a little conversation. And he instructed Yogamaya potency to transfer the child in the womb of Devaki to the womb of Rohini. And he would give her the capacity to do that. And then the next instruction was to appear as the child of Yashoda. Then the next instruction was, I will appear as the eighth child of Devaki. Vasudeva is going to bring me to the side of Yashoda and bring you back here to the prison house, but don't worry, Kamsa won't be able to kill you because you're my energy. And then after he fails to kill you, then you'll appear as Durga, and by so many different names in different parts of the land, different parts of India. Durga is known by different names. But he's speaking to Yogamaya. So Yogamaya and Durga, or Maya Shakti, are the same. Just one is a transformation of the other, or an expansion of the other. The original being Yogamaya, and Mahamaya being the expansion, just like an object and the shadow reflection of the object. That's what Mahamaya is. The Lord's power of illusion. And the power of illusion shown in the bottom works according to the modes of nature and thus bewildering the living entity. The classic example of illusion is mistaking a rope to be a snake. And the fact is, it's only a rope and there is no snake. So similarly, like in the Katyayani Vrata, very nice painting, over on the left is Goddess Katyayani. In the middle and on the right, there are the young gopis. They're worshipping Katyayani in order to have Krishna as their husband. So Krishna comes and gathers up their clothes and embarrasses them in the way you see in the painting. There's Goddess Katyayani underneath the tree. And all the gopis are offering the very same prayer, which is very interesting. There's no envy amongst them. They all want Krishna as their husband. They're all offering the same prayer. They're not saying, I'm going to get rid of you so that I can be Krishna's husband, so I can have Krishna as my husband. Their prayer is the following mantra. O Goddess Katyayani, O great potency of the Lord, O possessor of great mystic power, and mighty controller of all, please make the son of Nanda Maharaj my husband. I offer my obeisances unto you. So over on the left is Katyayani, or Durga, riding a lion with her four arms. But the Katyayani that the gopis were worshipping was the internal potency, not the external potency. And that's what the purport. This is taken directly. It's a lot of words, but it's important to understand the message of Kunti's prayers. Prabhupada's commentary. According to various acharyas, the goddess Durga, mentioned in this verse, is not the illusory energy of Krishna, called Maya, but rather the internal potency of the Lord known as Yogamaya. The distinction between the internal and external, or illusory potency of the Lord, is described in Narada Pancharatra, and the conversation being Shruti and Vidya. So that's like a very elevated conversation. Shruti personified and Vidya personified are having a conversation. And Shruti says, the Lord's inferior potency, known as Durga, is dedicated to his loving service. Being the Lord's potency, this inferior energy is non-different from him. There is another superior potency whose form is on the same spiritual level as that of God himself. Simply by scientifically understanding this supreme potency, one can immediately achieve the supreme soul of all souls, who is the Lord of all lords. There is no other process to achieve him. That supreme potency of the Lord is known as Gokuleshwari, the goddess of Gokula. Her nature is completely absorbed in love of God, and through her one can easily obtain the primeval God, the Lord of all that be. The internal potency of the Lord has a covering potency known as Mahamaya, who rules the material world. In fact, she bewilders the entire universe, and thus everyone within the universe falsely identifies himself with the material body, which is what Kunti is saying. One cannot see the Supreme Lord because of the illusory potency, but the illusory potency is an expansion or subpotency of Yogamaya. So besides the fact the gopis were worshipping the internal potency, although they were addressing her as Katyayani, their understanding was one who can deliver Gokuleshwari can deliver Gokuleshwara, association with the Supreme Lord. And Kunti is in fact connected with the internal potency, obviously. And so she can understand Krishna, although she indicates in her prayers that she doesn't. So the expansions of the internal potency, of course, are the gopis. There's a little bit more with this. The commentary of Vishwanath, he translates, rather before the commentary, "I do not know you, covered by the screen of Maya, beyond the knowledge of the material senses, and unaffected, just as the puppeteer behind the screen moving the puppets is not understood by the eyes of the ignorant." So the words of Kunti, as the actor on a stage, cannot be understood. He's using a slightly different metaphor, a puppeteer moving the limbs of a puppet. One doesn't understand the puppeteer behind the puppet. So here's a nice image I found, where puppeteers that were so expert they could make the puppet play the violin. Now, who's playing the violin? Is the puppet playing the violin, or is the puppeteer moving the strings playing the violin through the instrument of the puppet playing the instrument violin? So to the audience, it looks like they may not even see the strings and think, wow, this little guy is playing a violin. Well, like that, the feature of Maya does not allow us to see the person behind the activity. The one who is in the internal potency sees the person behind the activity, not only the soul, but the Supreme Soul who's sanctioning the soul. From his commentary, "Since internally you protected the child in the womb of Uttara, and externally you protect us by being near us, should I understand that you are all pervading? I do not know." That is expressed in this verse. I like Vishwanath, so bear with me while we just go through his commentary. So there is Maharaj Parikshit being protected internally from the Brahmastra weapon of Ashwatthama by Krishna himself. "You are covered by the curtain or Jananika of Maya, Krishna." Then Maya covers me? And long explanation saying, no. It's only fools who think that the sun is covered by a cloud. It's our vision is covered of you by the curtain of Maya. You're not covered by Maya. Our vision is covered because our vision is based on sense perception. But you're beyond sense perception. since knowledge derived from the senses is below you, those who are below you don't have the power to contact you. So similarly, I don't have the power to contact you. Since my knowledge arises from my senses, like the knowledge of a fool. But even if despicable people like me do not know you, there's no loss for you. You remain unaffected. Her humility. She's understanding all these things about Krishna. It's not by sense perception she's understanding these things, nor by mental speculation she's understanding these things. She's understanding all these things through the power of her devotion to Krishna. And she's placing herself in the position of one who is under the influence of Yogamaya and doesn't understand. Just like the moon at night covered by clouds. So the fullness of the full moon, the brightness of the full moon cannot be perceived because of the cloud cover. That's what Vishwanath is saying here. Krishna replies, but you see me directly and praise me. You know that I'm beyond Prakriti. Then why do you criticize yourself as being ignorant? Have you ever wondered that one? Why is she taking that position? Here's Vishwanath's revelation about that one. Though the dancer is endowed with rhythms and dance steps suitable to the rasa, the ignorant spectator, ignorant of the scriptures delineating performance, sees only a dancer dancing. Though he sees, he does not really see. Similarly, though I see you, I really do not see you. The word tata, or similarly, should be understood from the context. Though you protect the Pandavas, your devotees, since you are the soul within all of us constantly, you personally counteracted a weapon of Ashwatthama meant for killing the Pandavas. Though you promised not to use weapons, you took up a weapon. Though you protect the righteous, you had Bhishma and other righteous persons destroyed. Though you are most affectionate to Draupadi and Subhadra, you let their sons be killed. I do not know the truth about your pastimes. You're the repository of so many contradictions. And I don't understand these contradictions because I only know things through my sensory power. She understands these things, but she's taking the position of one who doesn't understand these things. He is inconceivable. Oh, there's a mistake. Yeah, here we go. In him all contradictory qualities are reconciled. That's a theme. It keeps appearing and appearing and appearing in Queen Kunti's prayers. And naturally it's so. That is, he's the source of everything. So within Krishna is everything. There's not something that exists that doesn't come from Krishna. Everything that exists comes from Krishna. Prabhupada said it very simply. There's two things. There's Krishna and there's Krishnas. There's not a third thing. There's no void in all of creation. Because void is where there's nothing. It's not either neither Krishna or Krishnas. There's no void in all the whole creation of God. So in this world, Kunti's noticing there's these contradictory things. You protect your devotees, but you allow the sons of Draupadi and Abhimanyu to be killed. That's contradictory. You promised you wouldn't take up a weapon. You took up a weapon. I don't understand you. Now, following what Kunti says is the next chapter, what Bhishma says, and Bhishma says the same thing. Bhishma is a Mahajan, one of the 12 Mahajans, who's stating it very clearly to Yudhisthira. Don't try to understand the intention, because that was used before, or the plan of the Lord. Great sages and mystics and transcendentalists and demigods, great personalities have tried, they haven't been able to understand. Who can understand? Krishna is mysterious. He's apparently contradictory. And one who is not a devotee is going to be spun out or bewildered, or just call it mythology or, you know, something. Because it's not penetrable. Now, what one can understand is whatever Krishna discloses. We had this nice discussion about acharyas having different points of view on the same verse or text or something. And it's perfectly okay. Because they're seeing the same thing from a transcendental perspective, uncontaminated by the modes of material nature, not speculating something, but realizing something, because Krishna reveals different somethings to his pure devotees. Just like, you know, in her prayers, the scene with Mother Jasoda chasing Krishna with a stick. Now, that doesn't happen in Vaikuntha. Who's going to chase Narayan with a stick? It doesn't happen. So when Kunti, who has reverential devotion for Krishna, she uses the language sees, but it's actually she heard. So she saw through her ears the Mother Jasoda chasing after Krishna with a stick and Krishna crying. Not crocodile tears pretending, but with feeling fear with the little stick in the hand of Mother Jasoda. That's bewildering. But Mother Jasoda doesn't see bewildering. She sees the crying of her son, and her son is crying, so I have to put down the stick. Yes, it's mysterious. Different persons, these are two mothers with parental affection, or relationship at least of parent to child towards Krishna, seeing the same thing in very different ways. So it's perfectly okay. Provided that the source is not receiving their idea from a speculative or ascending process, but a revelation process. Now, there has to be certain qualification for revelation. And we can make those distinctions according to Scripture, who has those qualifications. One more verse and we'll finish for the evening. Tata paramahamsanam. You yourself descend to propagate the transcendental science of devotional service unto the hearts of the advanced transcendentalists and mental speculators who are purified by being able to discriminate between matter and spirit. How then can we women know you perfectly? Now, this isn't a very popular verse for the politically correct changes of today's culture. She's seeing herself as, you know, because I'm in a woman's body, I don't have the qualification that these other personalities do. So she's referring to advanced transcendentalists and mental speculators who have become purified by the process of discriminating matter and spirit successfully. They become purified by that. So there's, in this world, ancient times and even present times, personalities that are very, very dedicated to some kind of pursuit of transcendental knowledge, discernment of matter and spirit, becoming detached from the temporary. And she's looking at these people, highly qualified people, and how can we women hope to see you, the object of bhakti, for the omniscient liberated sages. This is Vishwanath. The omniscient liberated sages are the object of bhakti for such aspirants. So his commentary, I am hopeless as a woman. Can even omniscient sages, paramahansas, who worship you with attraction for your sweet pastimes, being ignorant of the truth about your pastimes, know the intricacies of your pastimes? That is expressed in this verse. Amalat Manam refers to those who are free from the contamination of material gunas, liberated souls in this life. How can we see you, who are the object of bhakti yoga practice for the paramahansas? That the paramahansas worship the Lord has been explained in the Atmarava verse. So even the liberated souls, they worship you. How is it that, and they don't properly understand you, how are we going to understand you? Prabhupada explains like this. The Lord is so kind that he does not show special favor only to those who is a great philosopher. He knows the sincerity of purpose. So Kunti doesn't have that qualification. She has a much better qualification. She has pure devotion qualification with total humility because of her devotional quality. With her extreme humility, Krishna reveals so many things. She's purified in a deeper way by bhakti than by the purification that comes from discrimination of matter and spirit. Like we were discussing this afternoon about the fifth dimension of bhakti. The Bhagavatam is the Amala Purana, beyond the modes of nature. So it's beyond the modes of nature. It's what's beyond that, what's beyond Brahman realization is realization of Krishna's sweetness, the pastimes of Krishna, which even those that are purified by proper discrimination of matter and spirit can't understand because it's beyond that their capacity. Krishna doesn't necessarily reveal himself to those people. But one who is very humble and filled with devotion, as is Kunti, she has the real qualification. Although in her humility, she's comparing herself to them and saying, they're more qualified, I'm less qualified. It's like in Brihat Bhagavatamrita, lesson after lesson after lesson, in the part one where Narada Muni is searching for the greatest recipient of the mercy of the Lord. And each person that he goes to, sent by the previous person saying he's really the greatest recipient of the Lord's mercy, they all say, no, I'm not qualified. Here are the ways in which I'm not qualified. They're very keenly in touch with ways in which they're not qualified and respecting those that they feel to be more qualified. This is part of their qualification. In his commentary, Sanatan Goswami says that actually they're all pure devotees. Part of their qualification as pure devotees is their humility, not feeling themselves so qualified. And in that section, it's very nice. Sanatana Goswami says, practice like a definition of humility. Humility is where one has incredible qualification, at the same time feels oneself not qualified. And the second is, one has a natural inclination to look within, introspect and look within and see where there's deficiency. This is a natural characteristic of humility. And qualified souls have it. It's partly how they became qualified or more and more, more qualified in the increasing of their capacity. And Kunti has it. she's a fantastic role model for men and women. This is the last little part. Jiva Goswami makes a comment in his Bhagavat Sandarbha, about Krishna's descent, reference for this text 20. He references it in his Bhagavat Sandarbha. Why does the Supreme Personality of Godhead come to this world? He comes so that embodied souls may learn to fix their thoughts on his lotus feet, and, most importantly, so the devotees may taste the happiness of devotional service. Kunti's expressing like this in her prayer. You've descended, and you're illuminating, reciprocating with the hearts of these paramahansas who don't fully understand your pastimes. So how is it possible that I'll be able to understand your pastimes? But he comes for that reason. To elevate consciousness, and same as her prayers, which are so famous. Certainly within ISKCON, I don't know so much beyond ISKCON, but within ISKCON, the prayers of Queen Kunti are so well known. And they're very, very deep, and very, very profound, and very powerful. Certainly worth reciting again and again, and remembering again and again, and entering into the mood of them again and again, and becoming like Queen Kunti, you know, humble and intensely devoted, intensely appreciating Krishna's qualities. And next is going to come a whole section on Krishna's pastimes. So his name, his form, his qualities, and his pastimes. And she's conversant in all, and revealing through her prayers her feelings for Krishna, truths about Krishna, her realizations about Krishna, and her heart's hankering for him to stay at any cost. So we'll continue tomorrow. There's a midday program. I guess maybe when I come back again, I'll continue with Queen Kunti's prayers after. We'll see if we can finish them sometime. Very nice.